Missed an episode of Tim and Sid? Listen to every episode and subscribe with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand.
Tag Tim and Sid. Of course, I go by the name of the kid. Famous. Wow. This here is the Tim and Sid Show. You are now tuned in, coast to coast, entertaining the masses. Sports entertainment. Yeah. It's about to get started. Sit back, enjoy the show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
It's Tim and Sid for Thursday, August 13th. Is this a two-hour show, 6-0?
I'm not used to them anymore.
Are we on TV? No. Radio only. Online. I'm Tim McAuliffe. That's Sid 6-0. You hear him. We're live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan Online, courtesy of Sportsnet590.ca. Just put the player on your phone, and you can get us wherever the bleep you want. It is a jam-packed show. Let me tell you this. Coming up. In this order, Canucks head coach Travis Green off the top. His team owns a 1-0 series lead over the defending and reigning Stanley Cup champions of the world. Buck Martinez, he'll drop by. Interesting Jays game last night. Brian Burke,
it was unbelievable.
He'll drop by. I was watching Blue Jays baseball game 13. No, game 14.
15. They're 6-9. 15.
So game 15.
I was watching
Blue Jays game 15 over playoff hockey last night because I couldn't take my eyes off of whatever the hell was going on in that game. Brian Burke will stop by to fill me in on what I missed in the playoff hockey that I didn't watch while watching the Toronto Blue Jays. And we'll talk to, careful Tim, we'll talk to Kenny, the Jet
Smith.
Attention. When you change talk and Kenny the Jet Smith, you end up in a dangerous place. Either way, it'll just be Kenny the Jet Smith that we talk to on this play-in day. Western, are you interested in play-in day for the Western Conference? Yeah?
I didn't think I was going to be, but there's a couple of reasons. One, Damian Lillard. Damian Lillard, to me, has been the reason to watch this seeding round, whatever you want to call this for the NBA. And the fact that there's four teams, I mean, the Blazers and Memphis kind of have, they control their own destiny. It's really not that complicated. In terms of who gets 8-9, it gets complicated. But in terms of who gets into that 8-9, it isn't. And I kind of love how it's coming down to today. And it feels like week 17 in the NFL and teams are going for wild card spots. I am enjoying this, and I'm looking forward to hopefully a Memphis-Portland 8-9 playoff.
You know, Sid 6-0, you leave out Devin Booker, you leave out the Phoenix Suns.
They're not going to.
They might be the most interesting story of this restart, and I don't even know if they're going to get in. We're also loaded with news. We've got great guests, like four really good guests: Travis Green, Buck Martinez, Brian Burke, Kenny the Jet Smith. Careful how you say that if you're Tim McAuliffe. But we're also loaded with news.
By the way, Tim, the feeling you have now after saying Kenny the Jet Smith, if it lasts longer than 4 hours, let me know. We have to call somebody about that. Right. The news situation that Tim is alluding to here, as I get more serious, making a bad joke to McAuliffe, and for those listening on The Fan, as Alex Xero has been telling you, we'll keep an eye out on developments regarding Montreal Canadiens head coach Claude Julien. He's going to miss the rest of this Flyer series after being admitted to a Toronto hospital last night after complaining of chest pains. Still under observation. All the best to Claude Julien and his entire family. Hopefully, he gets over this very, very, very soon. Again, this is not COVID-related. The Habs were specific about that. This is another issue, and hopefully he gets through it. Again, if we hear something, we'll pass it along. Also, Bianca Andreescu officially withdrew from the U.S. Open. Schedule will begin later this month. She's citing conditioning concerns, which we all kind of understand. Also, Bianca, if you just wanted to blatantly say, I'm not going to the States, we all would understand as well, because we can see what's going on in the States. So Bianca Andreescu, where she became an international star a year ago at Flushing Meadows, New York. I always get that confused. Anyway, down in Queens, New York, she became a star. She is not going. You know, this is a tough decision considering what that tournament team, Tim, means to her. And that's the latest with Bianca. So we'll keep it. It's a heavy news day. It's a heavy hockey day. Blue Jackets are up 2-0 on Tampa as both try and find their legs after the 5-2 overtime thriller. It's 2-1 Columbus? 2-1 Columbus.
2-1 Columbus, yeah.
So that's the situation there. And we're keeping an eye also the Flames. Big game tonight against the Dallas Stars. They're up 1-0 in that series. Jays do have the day off before they take on the Tampa Bay Rays tomorrow. So that's part of the reason why we are 2 hours today, Tim. But let's, you mentioned the guest list off the front. Tim, I give it to you. Let's get right to it.
By the way, just to update the 2-1 Columbus score, the shots on goal, Tampa 26, Columbus 16, as they start the third period. And
yeah, Corpusalo needs another busy day. That's what he needs. Corpusalo needs another busy day. Goodness.
Well, it looks like he's getting it, and it looks like he's playing well again. Columbus has been impressive, but dare I say, Sydney, we may have seen the most impressive performance of the restart late last night from your Vancouver Canucks?
The Vancouver Canucks are feeling it. Four straight wins in the bubble after losing the first game to Minnesota. Travis Green is the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, and he has been kind enough to join us here from the Edmonton bubble on Tim and Sid. Travis, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Hey, guys. Doing good. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on here. This is, I got to say, what is the threat of overconfidence at this point? You guys are on a bit of a roll. I would assume guys are wearing the same pants, not cleaning underwear. The superstition is high. There is not, you guys right now, you don't have a lot of fear in you. What's the feeling inside the team?
Guys are gaining confidence, feeling confident. I thought game two of the last series was a big game for our group. I thought we had a real letdown after we lost game one, just because of the hype of the playoffs. And, you know, normally when you go into a playoff series, you don't, you usually got 3 or 4 days to prepare. And in this case, you had really probably months where you knew you were going to play Minnesota. There's a lot of buzz about the bubble and hockey starting up and being a short series. I just felt like we had to get our team off the mat a little bit after game one, and winning game two was big for our group. I think they have a lot of belief in themselves going in. We've talked about it really probably from the beginning of the season that we felt we had a good team. It's no secret when you play in a Canadian market, you hear a lot of white noise, we like to call it, from the outside. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of people picking us to be a playoff team. And our group, to a man, really felt that we could have a good season and believed in our group. And beating Minnesota gave the group extra confidence. And we know we're up against a real good team here. And it was a big win last night.
As a dad or a coach, you know how important confidence is. Can you feel confidence growing in your group?
Yeah. I think confidence and belief. They both go hand in hand, I guess. You know, you have to believe that you can win and believe that you can do well to have confidence, or it's probably not real confidence. And, I think our group has both of those things going right now, and yet they're a pretty grounded group. We try to be honest with our team daily, whether we win or lose, and they're a grounded team right now.
Travis Green joining us here on Tim and Sid. I know you mentioned the white noise, and I got to jump in here, Sid, because for 2 years now, both of us have really liked your team and have said as much on air, thinking if you were healthy, you guys could do damage. And it seemed like, you know, every time the roller coaster was heading to a good spot, there'd be another injury. And I know you lost Ferland,
right.
But do you feel like this team healthy is on the verge of kind of getting to a spot where maybe you guys saw it 6 months ago and where I'd like to separate my shoulder, patting myself on the back, saying that maybe we saw it too?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you ever sit there and start thinking about patting yourself on the shoulder, but I think we had a belief in our group that if we could be healthy and our young guys obviously continuing to progress in their game and from a skill standpoint and playing a game that is conducive to winning at this time of the year, that you know, we could be a good team. We've talked about for 3 years now, just improving every year. That was the expectations, and our goals this year were to be better than we were last year and try to make the playoffs. The expectations were to get better, and the goal is to make the playoffs. And we knew once you got there that, you know, you're giving yourself a chance. And we hope we can do this for, you know, I think we're just starting to get going, really.
Travis Green is a head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. Canucks up 1-0 on the Blues. Game 2 tomorrow night, 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 in Vancouver. I'm looking at, like, every guy on your roster here. I want to ask a question about everyone here, Travis, but we don't have the kind of time with you. The one thing, I want to go to JT Miller. Now, you said after the game last night, he couldn't take the warm-up, and you didn't want to get too much into it, and he obviously played, so I'll respect the answer, and I'll move on from that. What I want to ask is, because the video of him reading out the starting lineup for one of the Minnesota games went viral pretty quickly. And obviously, Jim Benning gave up a first-round pick for him, so there was an anticipation of what kind of role he could play. But in all honesty, Travis, did you anticipate him becoming such a part of the group's DNA the way he has become?
No, I didn't envision it being probably the effect that he's had on our group, this strong of an effect, especially since I didn't know him personally. But we did know that he was a competitive guy. We felt like he was at that stage in his career where he's probably matured a little bit, gone through some ups and some downs. And after I spoke to him on the phone, really heard it in his voice, what he was looking for in this stage of his career. You know, he knew he was coming to a young team with a young group of forwards that he could take on more of a leadership role. And, you know, it's one thing to say that. And we talked about that in the summer. I told him flat out, like, you're going to get everything you want here. You know, you're talking the talk, you got to walk the walk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first step is showing up, showing your new teammates that you're in great shape and you're ready to go. And he probably came in the best shape I think he's probably ever been, from what I've been told. And, you know, he really took the ball and ran with it, and he's been good for our group. Fits in with our team. He's got some swagger, and he's got a lot of skill in his game as well. So he's been a great fit. It was a great trade by Jim, and we're happy and lucky to have him.
I heard Kevin Bieksa compare Bo Horvat to a young Jonathan Toews, and it got me thinking. What do you think of that comparison?
Yeah, I think since Bo has come in the league, you know, he's probably heard those type of comparisons. And again, you go back to playing in a Canadian city, there is a lot of pressure. And you know, being named a young captain has brought, you know, new pressures onto him. We've tried to with our communications with Bo is, you know, he doesn't have to worry about being the next Toews, the next, you know, Bergeron. I've heard all kinds of names all the time, type of player he is. Just be the best Bo Horvat you can be. And, you know, do that every day and good things are going to happen. And he's really picked his game up here. Probably the last two or three games, that might be the best hockey I've seen him play. And again, he looks confident in his game and comfortable right now. And when you have that, it usually boils over into your game.
Travis, Tim and I know a few people running the Sportsnet production crew where you are. And I texted one after seeing that ISO of Bo winking at Braden Schenn, which was one of the more badass replays I've seen in a long time. Did you catch that replay? Are you cool with that? I mean, you mentioned swagger earlier with Miller. Are you fine with that?
You know, it's easy when you catch a 1 second clip of someone winking. There's lots of
That's
things
fair.
That you
That's fair.
You don't see what led up to that. You know, so I don't want to comment on it, but I think our team is probably as humble a team as you're going to find, not a cocky group. And Bo Horvat definitely isn't a cocky person whatsoever. He's, you know, he's a fantastic individual, and I'd love to see what the buildup was to that wink and you know, what that was all involved.
Yeah, sometimes context can mean a few things.
Yeah, definitely.
Travis Green joining us here on Tim and Sid. Speaking of what we saw on the broadcast yesterday, I know you're in the midst of a playoff round where you feel like you can do some damage. You got a good young team. You're playing the defending Stanley Cup champions. But your team's been through a little bit this year. Did you get a chance to see Stetcher's reaction when he scored the goal and what that may have meant to the kid and his family after going through what they went through around Father's Day?
Yeah, of course I've seen it and thought about it right away when he scored. You know, it's sad what he's gone through, and we've actually had two players go through that, you know, three in total this season. It's not something you hope anyone has to go through ever. And, you know, I think they're all lucky that they have great teammates around them and surround themselves, and to even start to think about what they've gone through, what Troy's gone through, wouldn't be fair for me to even try to guess. And you know, I know there's some days where it's really tough for him and, well, for all three of them. You know, you remember, I remember playing and what your parents mean to you on a daily basis when you're in the NHL, and even talking to them. I know Troy was really close with his dad and talked to him a lot about hockey. And I can only imagine what he's feeling at this time of year when he doesn't have that to lean on. So, yeah, it was emotional, I think is the best way to say it. I think his teammates felt it. I know I did, especially after the game. And it's touching, it's sad, and it's in a way, it was a good feeling as well.
It's funny because I saw, you know, the Pettersson grabbing a hold of him and giving him a big hug during the game. And yeah. I've been through some things in life, and I've learned that you can really discover a lot in the people around you when you hit lows. And Troy's comments to me about his teammates really stuck out, about the bench showing him love, and then hearing what Horvat had to say, hearing what Markstrom had to say. You've been around a lot of teams in your time in the National Hockey League. That seems to me to be a pretty mature response from a relatively young group.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, I'll say that. We've got a group that really enjoys being around each other. Been on teams that were really good that, you know, maybe weren't as close off the ice, but we're really close on the ice. And this team is probably the closest team I've been around playing or coaching. Just how they care about each other. And you know, they've gone through a lot in the last year with three of our players losing their fathers. And, you know, something to be said for having teammates that care about you, not just as hockey players, but as people and individuals. And it's really nice to see as a coach, to be honest.
Right, Matt. Travis Green, head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, here on Tim and Sid. And here to all of that, Travis. Quinn Hughes. I try not to read stats that compare one player to another too often, Travis, because it's just you can do anything with a stat. But there's one with Bo Bichette that we're going to talk about with Buck Martinez here in the next segment that caught my eye last night. The other was about your player. Quinn Hughes is the first defenseman in NHL history to get 7 points in his first five playoff games since Raymond Bork in 1980. Now, there's a section of our listening audience who aren't as familiar with Raymond Bork as maybe the three of us. Trust me, kids. Just check the numbers. Just check the numbers. Were you expecting this kind of start out of Quinn? You know, he's talented. You know, he's determined. Were you expecting this, though?
No. I think really from day one, he's surprised us, over exceeded what we were hoping we'd get in a player and a young player. And it really probably started in the five games he played, the year before when he came in after his college season. And, he played, I think, 14 minutes his first game. And I remember talking with Bomber after the game and just saying, hey, let's give him a little more next game. And it was 16, 18, 20. And we went into St. Louis the last game of the year, and they had to win a game. It meant something in the standings. So they were on, you know, they needed to win. And he played 22 minutes that night and played great in a tough building. And I think it was then that we really got excited. I think as coaches, sometimes you're excited about a player, but in the back of your mind, it's always a show me, don't tell me kind of thing. And again, he's just blossomed into a really good player, and he's super talented on the ice. But he's, you know, the great thing about a couple of our young guys is how humble they are off the ice and how coachable they are. You'd never know if this kid was a one or two defenseman or an eight or nine defenseman, and just comes to the rink every day with a smile on his face and is able to be coached. Doesn't get too affected by things. Just a great kid to coach.
Travis Green joining us here on Tim and Sid. Last one for me, and I've always been taught that you never underestimate the heart of a champion, and judging from what I know about you, you won't. but what do you need to do to keep the upper hand against St. Louis?
Well, I mean, they came hard at us last night. You could feel it on our team. You know, we're going to have to get better. That's a really good hockey team, and I don't even have to talk about them. When you win the Stanley Cup, there's not much you have to say.
Yeah.
Our team's got a lot of respect for them, but they also got a lot of belief in themselves. We'll meet with our team again tonight. We'll talk about how we played last game, and then we'll talk about how we're going to win the next game, and that's all we really worry about. There's no doubt in our mind, much like the last series, but we're facing a really good team here. They're going to get better as the series goes on, and you got to raise your game every playoff series to win a series as the series goes on, and we're going to have to raise our game again for tomorrow.
We don't have much more time with you, Travis, but I don't really have a question, but I would just like to acknowledge and thank you for one of the best visuals of this entire postseason, your reaction to Tanev's winner in Game 4. Yeah. I know it was just a natural reaction of unbridled joy for someone in your position, but it was one of the great, because you're not Captain Serious, but you are business. Travis Green behind the bench is business, and it was just kind of cool to see that release, especially after a big win like that. So that was fantastic. Congratulations on that. I know you feel like you're just getting started like every other team. Good luck tomorrow night, and thank you for giving us the time here, Travis. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Okay. Thanks for having me, guys. That was good.
All right. Be well. Stay well.
Okay. See you guys.
There is Travis Green, head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, updating from Toronto. It is Columbus 3, Tampa Bay 1.
Oh, wow.
Game 2 of the series. So if you thought that the Columbus Blue Jackets were going to go quietly into the night after a 5-OT loss, they are up 3-1. Wenberg with an absolute beauty.
What a great move. Oh, my God. And dress that defenseman. My God, Timmy. Thank you for bringing that up. I have it up in the room. I had my head down. That was great.
You were talking to Travis Green.
I know. It's a great goal.
I wanted to add one more, because I feel like the one stat that I kept going back to with the Vancouver Canucks to prove that we're not just jumping on this bandwagon, and I may have been harder on the Canucks than you were both ways. Like, I thought they were better, and when they had those roller coasters, I would get a little bit more mad than you would at the team and hold them more accountable. But the one thing I kept going back to was how important Tanev and Edler were to this team. You brought some stats, which I love. I always love when Cicero brings the stats.
Doesn't happen often. Sometimes.
Here's one from me. With Tanev and Edler in the lineup over the last 2 years, they're 56, 37, and 11. Without one or both of them, they're 19, 27, and 6. 56, 37, and 11, and a 19, 27, and 6. Well below 500, well above 500. Those two are one or two of the more underrated defensemen in the league, and it's in part because they play in Vancouver.
Yep. And health, Tim, health for everyone at this time of year is pretty important, although the Blue Jackets are missing people today, and they're up 3-1. Vancouver, it's very, very important. Like, and we've seen what happens when they get injuries down through the years. Depth is an issue. With a lot of clubs, but specifically with Vancouver, Travis Green, for this to continue, is going to need every hand on deck. And that's why the JT Miller not in the warm-up yesterday really freaked people out.
Yeah.
And Travis Green, obviously, post-game last night did not want to talk about it, so I just kind of left it. But They got to stay healthy. If they can stay healthy, look out. Game two tomorrow night. It's going to be fun.
Buck Martinez is next. I just want to ask if you heard him say that the Canucks play the type of hockey that is conducive to winning this time of year.
I'm not mentioning the team you're referring to. I'm not going to do that today.
Buck Martinez, Brian Burke, Kenny Smith, all up on this edition of Tim and Sid. We'll talk with Buck next right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This edition of Tim and Sid, what does losing a head coach do to a team in the middle of the National Hockey League playoffs? The Montreal Canadiens are about to find out. We'll discuss with Brian Burke, Kenny the Jet Smith at TNT, also stopping by on what is Western Conference playdown days in the NBA. All that coming up, but what the hell happened in Buffalo?
Tim, Buck Martinez will tell you, 18 hits, 7 home runs, not enough usually in baseball. Buck Martinez joins us here on Tim and Sid. Buck, what on earth was that? Have you processed it yet?
I was having a tough time processing it last night. You know, after the third inning was 8-0, and I thought that was pretty much it. But the Blue Jays came back, and, you know, it was a back-and-forth thing. 4 hours and 21 minutes of baseball. And there were great moments, there were awful moments, and there were some exciting moments, and there were some deflating moments. A little bit of everything in that game last night. Unfortunately, the Marlins scored 3 in the top of the 10th, and they won it. So they split the 2-game series.
You've been around baseball for a little while. How many have you seen like that? Because you're right. Like, you're not kidding. That wasn't hyperbole. Like, there were awful moments. There were runs handed away. There were great moments. There were, like, head-shaking moments. Like, how many of those have you seen like that?
Yeah, I've seen some big dramatic comebacks. In fact, Chris Mihalik, who pitched for me in the early 2000s, sent me a text last night. He said, I remember I had a 9-0 lead at Fenway Park. And I texted him back and said, don't remind me. But Manny Ramirez and those guys came back and they won the game. But I've not seen a game last night where there were so many bad plays. Just bad plays. You know, Danny Jansen threw a ball to second base and the guy came in from third. And there was nobody at second base to cover. He also had a pickoff play at first base, and Vladdy wasn't aware of it. You know, defense was awful. The base running was awful. And the one bright spot on the pitching side of it was Shun Yamaguchi pitched really well, and Brian Berukhi and Romano continued to pitch well. So there were some shining lights in an otherwise very disappointing evening.
I got to tell you, Yamaguchi was the shock of the night for me. I'm sure Charlie Montoyo appreciated that performance, but expecting. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't think anybody was, but you know what happens is he led the league in strikeouts in Japan last year, and we saw how he did it last night. He was up to 94 with his fastball. His splitter was good. He had great movement on it. He threw some at 88 miles an hour, and I could see last night how he could be a successful pitcher. That's the first time we've seen it, going back to the first spring training way back in February and March. But, that was a good thing. And you know what? He's a little older pitcher. He's had some adjustments, of course, a different baseball, a different game, major league hitters. But last night was encouraging, and maybe there is something there.
Buck Martinez joining us here on Tim and Sid. And Buck, listen, I get young teams are going to make mistakes, maybe too many of them last night. But I also think that puts more pressure on Charlie Montoyo to put his club in the right position to succeed. He took a lot of heat last night. How much of it do you think was warranted?
Absolutely. It's, I don't think any of it's warranted. You know what happened? The worst thing that happened to the Blue Jays and the Blue Jay fan base when they announced the extra layer of playoffs. So now there are 8 teams, and automatically everybody thought the Blue Jays are going to get into the playoffs. Well, you know what? They're inexperienced. Most of these players haven't had a year of Major League service under their belt yet. And they're going to make mistakes. I believe they're going to be good Major League players, and some of them are going to be great Major League players. But it takes a while to get your feet on the ground, and you're going to make silly mistakes. The physical errors, they come with baseball. The mental errors, that's got to stop. You can't throw to a base when there's nobody covering. You can't get thrown out trying to advance on a fly ball to center field. And you know, that wasn't an inexperienced player. That was Travis Shaw. But I think they're just making too many mistakes. And Charlie alluded to that last night after the game when he said, hey, we got to cut down the mistakes and we got to play better defense.
Buck Martinez here on Tim and Sid. Apologies to Buck and our audience. There seems to be a bit of a delay in terms of us and Buck. We're going to go through this here because we love Buck so much and he's the best. And
Let me hold on a minute. Let me call you. Call me back. I'm going to change my phone.
Okay. We're going to change the phone momentarily. Brief pause in the conversation as we go over this 14-11 loss by the Jays last night. Tim, I didn't listen. I was watching the front end of the game. I'm like, well, I got to watch Habs Flyers. Yeah. I got to watch Habs Flyers. Like, that was my I try and get my schedule ahead of time. You're probably the same way. Ahead of time, so you try and catch as many. It was lunacy. I couldn't pull myself away from it. And Dan and Buck were getting as excited as anyone about this wild game. Jays were down 8-0 and all of a sudden it was just nuts. I couldn't believe it pulled me away from a Flyers Habs game, but it did.
It was funny because I pulled into my son's baseball practice about 8-0, like right on 8-0. And I'm like, well, I don't need to check back in on that thing. Right. I started watching hockey and I was watching the practice and I was trying to get everything in. And then all of a sudden I do this all the time where I'll just flip and check scores. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? And it was, I believe it was 8-4, 8-6 when I flipped it back.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sportsnet.
But then you can't go anywhere. You have to stay. By the way, the fundamentals at your son's practice, were they better than the Jays game at times? Yes, what was more impressive to you? The fundamentals?
The 10-year-olds haven't quite got there. Yeah, I don't know.
I saw some 10-year-old defending last night.
I do know snap throws to second with nobody there probably won't happen in my 10-year-old's game.
Not a good idea. Buck Martinez, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Oh, apologies, Buck, for that. That's fine. Well, let's jump back into it. I want to talk about some of the positives here.
Yeah.
Bull Bichette last night became the youngest shortstop since Cal Ripken in 1982 to have a 5-hit game with a home run. Big picture, Buck, of all these young Jays running around proving themselves and with the hype surrounding them, is the first of these young players to get signed long-term by this franchise in your mind going to be Bull Bichette?
Yes. I think he has proven that he has one thing on his mind, that's being the best player on the field every day. And he has another thing on his mind, secondly, he wants to win World Series. He wants his team to win. And I guarantee you, he was in the middle of that dugout when they were down 8-0 and said, we got a lot of time left, boys. We're going to come back in this game. And you saw the same thing from Kevin Biggio. After Cervelli celebrated striking out Biggio, Kevin turned around and said, we're not done yet. This isn't over. And he was right. And, you know, those are the guys that you have to identify early, make them the leaders of your team, and build around them. You know, they're very good young players. What the Blue Jays need is they need an impact bat or two in the lineup. There's no question about it. When you think of Juan Soto and what he did with Washington last year, he had Anthony Rendon, he had Howie Kendrick, he had Adam Eaton, he had Ryan Zimmerman, he had guys all around him that were veterans, and they took the pressure off him so he could be freed up and do his thing. And he came to the surface and he became a star. You've got to have complementary veteran players in the middle of this lineup to take the heat off the kids.
I could not agree with you more. Before we let you go,
it's going to be a while. I don't think they need to do it overnight. I think they need to let these kids grow. And like I said before, I think the worst thing that happened to Blue Jay fans is that extra playoff layer, because automatically they said, oh, we're going to be in the playoffs. But when you look at the experience level of this team, it's not there yet. If everything goes perfectly, if they play perfect baseball the rest of the way, they can get in, no question, on the strength of their pitching and their bullpen. But they have to play nearly perfect baseball. They can't make base running mistakes. They can't make fielding mistakes. They can't make mental mistakes. They're going to have to play nearly perfect baseball to get into the postseason. They're capable of doing that, but they've got to turn it around in a hurry.
Right, and that's the experience, and even when you're talking about adding the bat to the lineup, I couldn't agree with you more. And I also think that you figure out what kind of personality you want in that veteran leader during times like this, where you're starting to figure out who your young kids are. And it goes back to something that I wanted to ask you about, because believe it or not, I was there in 2001. In fact, you and I had a one-on-one when you were hired as the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays back in 2001.
I didn't know you were that old, Tim.
Yeah. I may have even had hair, Buck. But you only got a year and a bit. So you speak from experience. Like, when can you start actually understanding what a manager brings to the table? I mean, there are people in Toronto who still insist that Cito did nothing in his time as manager. Like, when do you start judging what Montoyo is bringing to the table?
When you see a consistent personality of the team, when they get upset at their teammates for making mistakes, when the teammates start policing the dugout. And Charlie has encouraged them to do that. And, you know, I think people are getting on me because I think Charlie's the right man for this job, and I still say that. He's managed 18 years in the minor leagues, and he understands this age player. He had all of these guys that grew up and went to Tampa Bay and become championship and division winners and playoff players. Charlie is the right guy. He needs to have more freedom to put his mark on this team, and I think he's the guy to teach these guys. It's your team. You have to develop the personality. You want to represent yourself and this team, and you have to hold all your teammates accountable. Every single night you go on the field, you have to expect to win. I know there's a core of these guys that really expect that, and they got to get everybody else on board. And you know what? It's going to take a while. It just doesn't happen overnight. You just can't wish yourself to be good. When you look at the teams, and there's no greater example than Houston. And then you see Houston, you see the Dodgers, year in and year out. You know, the Dodgers always talk about Cody Bellinger, what a great job he did. Well, who did he have around him? He had some veteran players like Justin Turner, who holds all the young guys accountable. And Fernando Tatis Jr., who's he got? He's got Eric Hosmer and Manny over at third base and Manny Machado. So they have to have complementary players that have done it before that can show them the ropes. And guys like Edwin Encarnacion and Nelson Cruz and Kyle Seager and all of those types of guys, they're the guys you need to plug into the middle of this young team. And that will happen when the time is right.
Jays open up a weekend series tomorrow in Buffalo against Tampa. Buck Martinez will do the game from the Dan and Buck Studios at One Mount Pleasant in downtown
not
Toronto.
Dan and Buck Studio yet. There's a lot of Tim and Sid in that studio.
Yeah, wait for the Jays to make one playoff run, have one playoff game, then it's officially anointed the Dan and Buck Studio. I feel it slipping away from our grasp here, Buck, but I'm fine with it because you guys are phenomenal. Have a good day here, Buck, and we'll be watching tomorrow night. Take care, sir.
Thanks for having me, fellas. Always great to be with you.
Always great to have you. There is Buck Martinez. By the way, I took a swim at noon. I've been making my kids baseball practices. Like, they can make themselves at home. we can't do a lot of the things that we normally do.
But I think we need to have this discussion on air, though. I do want to have this discussion, the pros and the cons of not being in that Tim and Sid studio and allowing two Hall of Famers in Dan and Buck to take it. Because there is something, I'm with you on a couple of things. Yeah. They're like, I don't hate the commute, right?
Can I? Yeah. And can I just say, and I know they come on the show and I know they work for the same company. I hope Blue Jays fans understand you have one of the greatest play-by-play guys in the world and one of the greatest color guys in the world. And if you go around Major League Baseball and you ask people, they will tell you all across the United States of America, a Canadian in Schulman is one of the best. And Buck Martinez, who's been around this organization for such a long time, is also one of the best. I hope Canadians and Blue Jays fans appreciate having those two guys doing all 60 games if we get there, because they are really that good.
I mentioned Hall of Fame, Tim. I wasn't kidding.
No, I know.
I echo. Yeah. It's a great point. And again, this is one of the best baseball booths I have ever heard in my life.
Agreed.
And there's been some good ones out there. So Jays fans, while you're soaking in some of these errors to second base, because it's a young team and it's going to happen, remember who's giving you the goods during this game. These guys are Hall of Famers. And echo everything Tim said. Completely.
For those driving around that might not know, the Columbus Blue Jackets just won game two.
Amazing.
Against Tampa. They are now knotted at one game apiece. True story, I got a text from a friend that said, "Don't feel as bad. The Leafs got shut out by a god."
Starting to believe that.
You
starting
to you believe and I had the conversation. Do you feel better if the team that beat you shows success down the road? And I do. I think that there you can see how good a team is by what they do after they beat your team, so long as they stay healthy and all those things. And I wonder if we're not beginning to appreciate what Jonas Korpisalo and the Columbus Blue Jackets do, even if they don't win this series.
We'll bring it up with Berkey coming up at 6 Eastern here. Also, we're going to take a quick break. We're late. The Raptors put out a statement, Tim, and we need to talk about it. We're going to do that next. This is Tim and Sid online and on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Jonas Korpisalo has stopped 154 shots in 3 playoff games played over 5 days.
Whatever. Don't impress me much.
All right, Shania.
Come on. Bring strong stats next time, McAuliffe. Give me a break. Come on.
Tim and Sid across the Sportsnet Radio Network here in Toronto on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The story out of last night with the Toronto Raptors was a heartwarming one. The bench, spurred on by the starters and even the starters of the Philadelphia 76ers, ended up getting a win over the Sixers. And Adrian Griffin was the head coach of the team as Nick Nurse watched from somewhere else. That Hollywood story that seemed like a great feel-good moment for the Toronto Raptors was broken up earlier today when allegations of domestic abuse from Adrian Griffin's ex-wife surfaced on the internet. And the Raptors promised a statement, or at least told people that they were going to give a statement, and that statement has been released from one, the Raptors, and two, Griffin himself. I'll start with the Toronto Raptors. They said, "When we saw these allegations this morning, we were dismayed. Adrian is a valuable member of our team. Our leadership immediately spoke with him, and he flatly denied the allegations in the post. We will support the process as he and his former partner settle these matters." From Griffin himself, and I quote, "This morning, accusations were made against me on social media by my former wife, and I vehemently deny. We are involved in a long-standing legal dispute over alimony and child support arrangements. I am disappointed to have to address false accusations in this way, and I apologize for any distraction this has potentially caused for our team at this important time." End quote.
Here's what I'm thinking right now, McAuliffe. I really hope that an organization like the Raptors, run by Masai Ujiri, a rather upstanding organization, who is very influential, not just in the basketball world, considering their success. I hope they got all the information they need, because you and I have seen enough instances in 2020, in 2019, and in the social media age, where sometimes the story we're looking at ain't the story. And a tweet, when you and I go off air an hour after, may shed some different light. Mm-hmm. I really, really hope, because these allegations were incredible, I really hope the Raptors have the whole story. And sometimes with social media, I don't know if anyone has the whole story. And I'm kind of surprised at the end. I'm surprised at this tact. I'm kind of surprised.
But that's why you need to go through the proper steps. And listen, I have confidence in a leadership group like Masai Ujiri that they will, if those accusations are true, will be taken care of appropriately, no shirking responsibilities, and that they go through the proper channels to figure out if those accusations are true. And if they are, then they'll be dealt with in a prompt and proper manner.
I would hope that happens.
All right, we'll take the break. We'll come back with a little bit more. Brian Burke, Kenny the Jet Smith, right here on this edition of Tim and Sid on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Sid Sexero.
Gorgeous, gracias sheepdogs. Welcome to hour number two of Tim and Sid. We will go the full hour this time around. Sydney, looking at the NBA basketball scores as we begin this second hour on what is basically Western Conference playdown day.
Selection Thursday.
The Memphis Grizzlies taking care of business. They are up 20 at the start of the fourth quarter on the Bucks. Guess who has a triple-double through three quarters?
It's got to be Jonas.
Jonas Valanciunas has 20 points, 14 rebounds.
Oh, I was joking. I thought it was Dylan Brooks. It's actually Jonas?
Oh. Jonas Valanciunas, 20-14-10. They lead by 20. End of the third quarter, the Suns are up 25 on the Mavericks. Devin Booker has 27-7-5. So later on tonight, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, Spurs and Jazz. And then it looks like the Trailblazers will control their own fate 9 p.m. Eastern against the Nets, but they'll have to win.
Oh, yeah, but they knew that coming in today. Like, they had their destiny in their own hands here, and the way Dame Dolph has been going, Damian Lillard, I wouldn't bet against them, but you never know.
No, but they could have lost that game and still made the playoffs. There was a possibility happened.
But winning it locks it up completely, 100% they're in. Right. As the eighth seed, it's not an issue, and they only have to win one game when the other team has to win two. This is fun. I didn't think I'd enjoy this part of the season, but I'm enjoying it. Tim, I know you and I also enjoying the hockey. The hockey's been good. The hockey's been strong. Brian Burke of Sportsnet joining us. Burkey, how you doing, man?
Good, guys. How are you?
Pretty good. Let's start with the Canucks, because we had Travis Green on last hour, Burkey. What sticks out to you when you watch Vancouver play right now?
Well, they came out with a snarl that they don't usually display. They came out and said, you know, this is a team that likes to hit, so we're going to hit. And I thought I was really impressed with the physical display they put on. And then they stuck with the game plan and put it away. So I was impressed.
It's funny because Travis Green came on here, and it was interesting given the Leafs redux. And he said, we play the type of hockey that is conducive to winning this time of year. And I didn't know that they had that in them. I knew they had the players. I love the additions that Jim Benning has made to this team. But maybe what's most impressive, Brian, is that it's not those guys carrying the load. Like, JT Miller's been good, but their young kids have been really good.
Yeah, they've done a good job restocking the pantry there. And they've got good young players. They've got exciting young players. And right now, they're buying in. They think they can win this series, and they played like it.
How much pushback do you expect from St. Louis tomorrow night in Game 2?
Well, I didn't think St. Louis was that bad. I mean, they have to play a certain way to win. They're going to play heavy hockey, and there were a lot of big hits. And as I've said repeatedly on television, those hits accumulate in the course of a seven-game series. So you see a guy take a huge hit in Game 1, and in Game 2, he might not take that same hit. He might just bail on the puck. So I'm a big believer in playing physical and staying with it. That's how they play. I don't think they'll change their game much, and I think there's still going to be a problem for Vancouver.
Brian Burke joining us here on Tim and Sid. Obviously, our thoughts and prayers go to Claude Julien, and we wish him the speediest of recoveries, because we don't know a hell of a lot. So I got to ask you, how much does this change a team to have their head coach missing for what we're told is the rest of the season?
The series, it's far from ideal. And obviously our first thoughts are the health of Claude Julien, who's a great guy and a great coach. But it's not ideal. But Kirk Muller is a pretty seasoned guy. And assistant coaches now have a big voice on teams, more than they used to. So I think the players will just view it as, okay, we got Kirk behind the bench instead of Claude. Let's get her done.
In the release on the back end, and I don't know why it stuck out to me, but in everything that's going on, the Habs did make the point of letting the media know Kirk Muller does not know French like that. Even in this moment, is there pressure on him to try and communicate with that part of the media in Montreal? Like, I found that really odd that they would put that in a press release where you're talking about the health of your coach. I found it strange.
Well, I think it's important in that marketplace that that the coach speak French. And when Mark Crawford was hired to coach the Quebec Nordiques, one contingency in his contract, or one requirement, was that he learned French, and he immediately began working with a tutor. It is important in that marketplace, but I think everyone understands you've got a health issue here. You can't be harping on that.
Kirk Muller's a pretty well thought of, though. Like, he could be the next head coach somewhere, couldn't he?
Yes, for sure. Yeah. This is not catastrophic. This is not, you know, like John Tortorella really dominates the coaching staff there and dominates the team and the message to the team. That would be a bigger issue. I think Claude's more collegial, involves his assistants more. And Kirk Muller, as you say, the players respect him as a player that played the right way, had a long and successful career. They'll listen to him. I don't think this is a big deal.
This is a tough one for me, Berkey. 24 seed, last one to get into the postseason. Just the second playoff appearance in 5 seasons for Montreal. But do you look at Marc Bergevin's rebuild a little differently now that they took out Pittsburgh? And I say this knowing full well, Carey Price will be 33 in 3 days and Shea Weber is 35 tomorrow.
Well, the problem with working in Montreal is that you're stupid twice, right? You're stupid in French and you're stupid in English. And so every trade you make gets criticized and questioned. Bergie, as we call him, has made some great trades. And then the young players, he got Suzuki in the deal for Pacioretty. And Nick Suzuki's been phenomenal. And he's a big kid. Like, you think of him as a smaller guy, but he's thick. He's a 200-pounder. And Kotkaniemi's having a good playoff, too. So all of a sudden, they've gone from an over-the-hill team. And Shea Weber's got lots of hockey left in him. I don't care if it's his birthday or not. But he's still got lots of hockey left in him. He's playing like he's 5 years younger. And so, to me, if I'm a Montreal season ticket holder, I got a lot more hope right now watching those two kids than I did before. And Brett Kulak stepped up and played well for them. Another good acquisition. So, yeah, I think he's done some great things. They've got some holes. But right now, the difference, the reason they're still playing is Carey Price.
Oh, he's been fun. And again, one of the greatest saves in the history of hockey. And I don't think I'm overstating it last night. That was just...
Nick Suzuki thinks so.
I watched that and I'm thinking to myself watching, have I ever seen a better save? And I'm not sure I have.
I can't fight you on that. That was one of, and you know the save was messed up when you had to watch it like 3 or 4 times to kind of figure out what had... It was like one of Vince Carter's dunks in the dunk-off. You had to watch it a couple times to figure out what it is you just saw. Berkey, my question is the kid at the other end, though. I mean, you have the motivation of taking on your hero, Carter Hart, taking on Carey Price. When you see Carter Hart, do you see the type of goalie that people envision for this young man?
I do, but, I mean, this year they played him in a lot of home games early, and they played Elliott on the road games, or I might have it backwards. But they were protecting him earlier in the year. He's really emerged the second half of the season. And he looks like a top young goalie, but it's only one game, and we'll see. I really like their team. I think Montreal's in trouble, but I think that he looked really confident. He didn't look like a kid.
I want to get to the Leafs, the end-of-season availability, but we have one more Canadian team that I want to get to, and you know it pretty well. The Calgary Flames will play Game 2 of their series with the Dallas Stars tonight, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. That is 8:30 local in Calgary. Are you seeing something different from this team than you've seen before, or are they finally figuring out what playoff hockey needs to be?
Answer to both questions is yes. First off, I think they've gone to a much more physical style the last, you know, 10 or 15 games before the pause. And they start their third line, and they've got big, ugly people that play big and ugly. And the other thing, too, is they don't have to rely on one line like they did when I was there. If Monahan's line wasn't going, then the team wasn't going. Now they're getting secondary scoring from people like Dylan Dubé. They're a much deeper team, but they will rattle your teeth. And it's really important, I think, to create room for the skill guys when you have that component. And that's Brian Burke hockey. When you're bottom six, you want some ugly people in there.
And but there's also the scenario playing out in Calgary where, I mean, obviously the top line got eviscerated in the media after the Colorado series last season. When you have a line like the Dubé line with Bennett and Lucic doing what they're doing, Lucic's taking faceoffs again, and basically they're doing the Zoom post-game news conferences. They're the line people kind of want to talk to. How much heat does that take off Goudreau and Monahan and allow them just to kind of be them without that pressure, and then they can find themselves?
I think it takes a lot of pressure off them. And obviously, usually when that happens, when a big line goes dry, the team struggles and people don't step up. So this is a luxury. It gives them some time to find their game. And I noticed that Sean Monahan's contributing in other ways. He's throwing big body checks. That's not his game. So I always had a theory. I tell players this. It's not going to be going for you every night. You're not going to feel a puck every night. So there's 82 games. So in the games when you're not feeling it, you have to find another way to contribute. It might be winning faceoffs. It might be winning faceoff battles if you're a winger. It might be forechecking aggressively, throwing big hits. But you can make a difference in the game, even when a night where you know. I remember playing in college. I went to my center one night, and I said, do not pass me the puck tonight. Like, my hands feel like I soaked them in formaldehyde overnight. So, but I said, I'll be the first guy in. I'll be the first guy in on the forecheck. I'll throw some big hits. I took faceoffs when I was killing penalties. I said, I'll win the faceoffs. I'll backcheck aggressively. I'll do everything else right. You can just concentrate on offense. But do not, under any circumstances, pass me the puck.
It's funny. I was thinking the same thing with Colorado last night. Like, they're in a dogfight, pardon the pun, with the Coyotes. And it ends up being Kadri and Kanfor who score the goals, right?
Like, yeah.
And then they get the pretty one from the top line. Like, it's real interesting to me to see the breakdown of the Leafs and how and why they lost, and that not understand that depth and quality of depth in the lineup means a bleep load in the playoffs.
Yeah, and these teams share a characteristic too. Justin Bourne corrected me the other day when I said, you know, the teams that have won recent cups have all been bigger teams. And he said, well, Pittsburgh really wasn't. But
no. Most
of the teams that are still playing have size, have depth, have a deep defense. And, you know, like on Toronto, when Jake Muzzin won his cups in L.A., he was the number three or four defenseman.
Right.
And here he's number two. They just don't have enough quality. Morgan Riley's a marvelous number one, but they just don't have enough quality or depth on their D. And so that's one common characteristic that these teams all seem to have is, like Chicago, they had to plug in another defenseman tonight, and they've got a guy who looks just fine. So I think the depth is important. I think the bite is important. But I think this all started, again, I don't feel we're piling on at Sportsnet because we called this all in real time. When they signed Tavares, we all said, great, but it's a 7-year deal. They're probably going to choke on the last couple of years of that deal. And we said it also induces a cap issue. So then they signed Nylander, then they signed Matthews, then they signed Marner, and they got $40 million tied up in four guys, and they're all forwards. And that we said right there, that means Jake Gardner's gone. So one quality defenseman gone. Hainsey's gone, who is an important part of their team. So we've been calling out in real time. Now everyone's jumping on them now and saying they spent too much, they did this, they did that, they don't have this. But I think we've called these things out as they've occurred. So I don't feel like we're piling on. They need to upgrade their defense, and they have to get out of this cap hell somehow.
Brian Burke joining us here on Tim and Sid. Well, what do you think of those end of season chats with the media? I mean, you've been on the other side. Do you think we, the fans, the media, can actually draw conclusions from what for many are just talking points?
I'm an expert in these end of season failure press conference, and that's why I say I'm not. I'm very careful when I talk about this stuff to point out that I speak with authority on end-of-year press conferences when you've had disappointing results.
Berkey, forgive me. Only one team, last check, and I think you confirmed this to me the last time we spoke, only one team wins the cup per year. I can confirm with the NHL offices. Do not rip on yourself for that, please. Lots of GMs have the same type of news conference.
Yeah, but when you miss the playoffs and you have that news conference,
that's tough. Okay, all right. Good point.
I think we used to spend a lot of time on the messaging. So Pat Park was our media relations guy, and he'd say, okay, here's the three messages you have to make here that have to come across. One is, it's not good enough. We failed. It's not good enough. We say it's not good enough. We don't let just the media say that. Second, we're sorry. You know, we let the season ticket holders down. We're sorry it happened. And third is, what are we going to do to fix this? And that's what troubled me about the press conference was, I heard the GM say, we believe in our process. We believe in the players we have. We're going to stay the course. And I'm like, I wanted to hear, we're going to get some angry, ugly people. We're going to upgrade our defense. We're going to make some changes because they're not built for playoff success. They're built for good regular seasons. And to me, Brendan Shanahan was part of championship teams and played real hard. I can't imagine that he likes watching this, but they're like, no, we believe in our process. We're sticking with our process, and we're just going to stay the course. And I'm like, as a season ticket holder, that's not a message I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear, we're going to get bigger. We're going to upgrade our D. We're going to figure out the goaltending position, whatever it is, but not we're staying the course. Okay, stay the course means 4 years in a row out in the first round. And the fourth year, really, not even out in the first round. You'd make the playoffs. You'd make the Sweet 16.
Right.
The one thing I heard a lot of is from the players and from Kyle and Brendan, aside from the we need to get better and it's unacceptable, we do believe in the group or the core. Did that team look like on the ice they believed in each other at times? That was my biggest beef with what I heard yesterday. And I it's a nice line to say, and it looks good in print, and it looks good in a tweet. That team at times does not look... Are you telling me when that line change happened and it was Marinson and Anderson on the ice, that team believed in each other like that? I find that hard to believe.
Well, I think they're a tight group. I think this pause has really made teams come together, I think. I don't think they have a monopoly on that. But talking to different players through the pause and how they were staying in touch with Zoom calls and calls with the coaching staff, and it forced teams to come together a little more. It was an abnormal season, obviously. And I think that bonding effect, I think Kyle's right. I think his team is close, but I think they all are now.
Right. The one thing I want to ask you, and listen, I know that people think of you as an old school guy, but I do know that you've put your time in on analytics. I know you've been to the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. And I wonder if the way that the NHL officiates the Stanley Cup playoffs differently than they officiate the regular season, and the way teams play in the postseason differently than the way they do in the regular season, could cause the analytics to lie a little bit to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Could you see something like that? Because it ends up being a small sample size, especially if you go out in the first round or the qualifying round, for you to judge your team on the playoffs when you've only got 7 games or 5 games versus the regular season. But eye test, we all see the game changes in the postseason, no?
Well, the first time I'm going to plug my daughter here on radio here, because the first time I got asked to speak at the Sloan Conference, my daughter Katie was a student in the MBA program at MIT and was in the room when I spoke at it. And then it got so big they stopped having it at MIT. They have it at the Boston Convention Center now. It's 3,000 people.
Right.
And my first appearance at the big conference was, I said, analytics are like a lamppost to a drunk, useful for support, but not necessarily for illumination. And I really believe that. I think analytics are important. You ignore them at your peril. But I think teams that rely strictly and solely on analytics, I mean, the problem with analytics is that you block a shot, right? So in the first period, you're killing a penalty and you block a shot in your shin pad. That goes on the sheet as a block shot. In the third period, you dive in front of a puck with your face, lose 4 teeth and get 14 stitches. That goes on the sheet as a block shot. So I don't think there's enough qualitative information in there as much as quantitative. So that's problem number one. Problem number two, it doesn't show toughness in an analytics chart. Like, it doesn't show some of the intangibles you need to win. It doesn't show leadership. So to me, I think it's important, and we relied heavily on it in Calgary. We used it a lot for game preparation. We used it a lot for the draft. But our first evaluation tool was eyeballs. We watched the guy play. Our second evaluation was background check. Find out as much as we can about this kid. Then we looked at the analytics. This is a guy we like. We think he's a prospect. We've examined his character. He's from a really good family. His work ethic's great. Now we'll look at the analytics. So we used it, and it would sort guys out for us, but it was also the third tool we reached for. And when I spoke at Sloan the one time at the MIT conference, I said, okay, just imagine your neighbor says, hey, I got a leaky sink. What's the tool you reach for? And I got a blank look. I said, a wrench. Jesus, Murphy, a wrench.
I was going to say wrench. Yeah.
Nobody knew what a wrench was. And I was like, Scott, are we that helpless?
Sometimes, yes. Brian Burke here on Tim and Sid. Berkey, I apologize for circling back on this one, but I'm curious. With what team and when did you do an end of season and you had your notes and you knew where you wanted to go with it, but that one reporter who was always a pain in your ass just pushed the right buttons and you went off in a way that you regretted after the fact, but in the moment you just couldn't help it?
I think that end of season press conference is really for your season ticket holders and sponsors. I think it's important you keep your head. I don't remember ever losing my cool. Now, when I left Toronto and was fired, I had a press conference, and Steve Simmons, who I don't care for at all, asked a question. And that's the proof to me that there is a God. Because I said, he asked me, where do you stand with USA Hockey? I said, you have to ask them. I said, Steve, the best thing about today is that I never have to speak to you again.
I remember that quote.
Yeah. So if anyone questions the existence of God, he exists. Because Steve Simmons asked me a question.
Berkey, always great chopping it up with you. Thanks for doing this. Stay well, and we'll see you on the TV. And I don't know, are you working today? Are you doing it today?
Nope. All right. Working the next 3 nights.
Right.
All right.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for talking to us on a day off then, and we'll be watching them all.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Be well. There is Brian Burke. Do you want to have the Steve Simmons conversation, Sixero?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Because, yes. Listen. Yes. In. All right.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, now? Oh, I thought we were going to break.
Do you want to break? Well, I don't think we have time.
We'll talk to Kenny. How about this? We're going to take a break. Kenny the Jet Smith is up next. There's a lot going on in the NBA. Adam Silver even said some things about fans and arenas next season. I want to get to all that.
Okay.
Last block, give me 2.5 minutes on Steve Simmons. That's all I ask. If you want to go longer on your end, if you want me to expand, no problem. But that's a minimum.
It might need to be a conversation.
All right. Yeah, no problem. I'm down.
All right.
I'm down.
All right. And we don't normally have conversations about guys that are on other stations, but it just seems to have come to a boiling point. And then Brian Burke brings up Steve Simmons, Kyle Dubas, gave him the one word answer. We'll do all that. All right. Good.
Deal.
We've never shied away from having these conversations.
Let's go.
Nor have we ever shied away from giving love to guys on the other station as well. So we'll do all that coming up.
By the way, in that vein, all the best to Bob McKenzie. In that vein, because I don't think
he's not going anywhere.
No, he's kind of retiring.
No, he's just
staying on the big stuff. He's brilliant. He's staying on the big stuff.
Oh, it's brilliant! It's absolutely brilliant.
He's going to be Bobby Margarita the rest of the way. It's brilliant.
He is the smartest man in the business.
Yes,
he's just working on the things that he wants to work on, but he's not doing that thing where he has to stare at his phone 24/7. He's just no longer an insider. He's brilliant. I want to be Bob McKenzie.
When I grow up, I want to be Bob McKenzie.
Definitely. All right. And have his head of hair. Time for a break when we come back. Right. Kenny the Jet Smith on play-in day in the NBA. And we might even get to the Toronto Raptors, who do another team thing. By the way, the Los Angeles Lakers lost to the Sacramento Clippers, if you think that it's just easy winning with your benches.
The Sacramento Kings?
What did I say?
Clippers. I see a bunch of Kawhis on that Kings team too, though.
It's Freudian slip.
You know what you want. That's a fine mistake. I'm fine with that mistake. I want that too.
Time for a break. Kenny the Jet Smith next. Here in Tim and Sid, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. This is Tim and Sid. One of the things that Sid and I have been passionate about for years: college football, college basketball, and we've been promising, though not speaking about it a ton because we know that not a lot of people are as passionate about that stuff as we are in Canada. One of the things we've been talking about is the possibility of the Power Five being thrown into chaos by COVID-19, Sid. And you just read me a quote during the commercial break that had me thinking, like, we might end up with a hell of a lot different NCAA when this is all said and done.
Well, let's bring Kenny the Jet Smith into this, because he's, I mean, you're talking college athletics. Kenny is as passionate as ever. Kenny, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. I do the Final Four and everything about it. So,
I just saw this football-related quote, and I was going to read it to McAuliffe here, so I want to bring you in on this as well. Everyone knows the Pac-12. They're not playing fall football, and the Big Ten is doing the same. However, the SEC is. So Nick Daschle covers Oregon State for the Oregonian. Now, Oregon State, out of their $80 million athletics budget, $58 million is football. So it matters to them. But the Pac-12 will not play. Nick asked the president of Oregon State, F. King Alexander, what the Pac-12 is seeing in their medical information that the SEC conference is not. Alexander said, quote, "I think probably reality." That is the quote coming from the president of Oregon State in terms of what other conferences are or are not doing. Before we dive into some basketball here, NBA variety, Kenny, I know the college story is just all-encompassing down south. What surprises you about what's happening, the tug of war here between health and money in football specifically?
Well, I think it's the same thing that we're seeing around the country from a state to state in America.
Yeah,
you're seeing such a different opinion from state to state on what you should do. Should you wear a mask? Should you not wear a mask? You know, all of the different things that go on. So there's not a uniform message that's coming from anyone right now. So that's very consistent in what we've been getting.
The possibilities from this and the ramifications from this are going to be felt far and wide, and we'll continue to monitor it. But we bring Kenny the Jet Smith on to talk a little NBA basketball, and this is turning into play-in Thursday. We've got a couple finals already. The Grizzlies take care of business. Of course, we all knew going into the day that Jonas Valanciunas, Charles Barkley's favorite name to pronounce, ended up with a triple-double, 26 19 and 12. Devin Booker has a big game. The Suns win. So now it's up to the Trailblazers. Do you see the Trailblazers struggling at all with the Nets tonight?
No. I think that everybody who's favored is going to win out. And these teams are locked in. And the ones who know they have an opportunity to be in it, they're locked in. The teams that are already in have kind of bubbled out, pun intended, and kind of just relaxing and waiting for things to happen. So I don't think that there's going to be a big change. The most unfortunate thing would probably be Phoenix, who won eight straight games down here and probably
incredible.
Won't make the playoffs.
Incredible. Future teammate of Draymond Green, Devin Booker, just absolutely going off. In the moment, are you thinking to yourself, Kenny, yeah, he's going to get fined for that comment? Is that what you're thinking?
Well, especially when Ernie asked, "Are you going to get fined?" I was like, "Ernie, well, Ernie should pay 25 of that." his ability to actually say that really highlighted the fact that he was doing something improper. and I guess they don't get stitches down here. Snitches don't get stitches.
If I give you stock in any team, but you can't cash that for 5 years, you only got to choose one. And I know that there's a lot of caveats and there are a lot of, like, I never thought I would say this, but are the Suns close to the team that you take moving forward, given what you've seen in the last little while, or is this just a one-off?
I wouldn't say stock. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of young, good teams in the league. You know, I would take stock in the Dallas Mavericks as well. You know, with Luka and Porzingis, the unicorn and whatever you want to call Luka, he's an absurdity nature. Whatever, what's that like? He's the avalanche or the earthquake? I don't know what he is. He's something different.
Wasn't that a tag team in the WWE, Avalanche and Earthquake?
Yeah.
The Natural Disasters. I think they were the Natural Disasters, Tim. Yes. Yes, correct.
Yeah, I'm a wrestling fan, WWE. I was just on that show last week. But long story short, I think that those guys are – I would put stock in Dallas for sure. I would put stock in Toronto because I do believe that they figure out really good talent there. And it just takes one superstar with very good players to win in the NBA now. You don't need that four or five superstar guys.
Kenny the Jet Smith of TNT inside the NBA here on Tim and Sid. Kenny, my favorite moment of the seeding round was probably the Damian Lillard Clippers back and forth. And it kind of opened my eyes to the possibility that when these games get even more intense, and we haven't seen anything yet, will there be fights backstage? Will there be incidents with the guy? I'm not kidding. Like this, the intensity at times in this round got to a place I wasn't expecting. Could we elevate it even further?
NBA's lovers, not fighters, man. Those guys are very good talkers.
Man, look, it wasn't that long ago someone called for a police presence in the back room, right? Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
Exactly. I'll say this. I played in the NBA over a decade. I grew up in New York City. I feared walking into my elevator. I never feared of walking into an arena. Never. I never walked in or out of arena and said, I got to watch my back. Never, ever. So for me, a guy from New York City, I'm worried about the fights in the hotels. No.
All right.
I would actually give a guy my room key. I'd be like, here's my room key, man. You don't want to talk to me. See me after the game. Here's my room key.
Not even when Oak was around?
Now, that's a different story now. I would change hotels if Oak was there. That's the only guy I know that would actually put some fear in what I was thinking. The rest of those guys, nah.
Kenny the Jet Smith joining us here on Tim and Sid. You were high on the Rockets before the pause. A little scare for Westbrook, some up and down play in the bubble. Has that got you shook at all?
No, I think the playoffs are going to be totally different, you know, unless he gets, you know, not playing. But playoffs are going to be totally different once that starts. Because guys, their attention to detail will change. I think the Lakers even will play a little better, much better when the playoffs start. I don't think the Rockets. I think the Rockets and James Harden and what he does is going to be difficult in that bubble. Everyone keeps saying, I keep hearing every player when I talk to him go, "Man, it's a shooter's court. Man, it's a shooter's court." So which means that the angle is just—it seems like you're back in a high school gym when it's easy to find the rim. Which means basically, if you're dribbling around and your head is down and you look up, it's easy to find the rim because there's not a lot of space and not a lot of fans. In the area, so it's easy to find the rim. So that makes it a shooter's gym. So you can find the rim quickly once you look for it.
Kenny the Jet Smith here on Tim and Sid. The stat just came across our phones here, Kenny and Timmy. I don't know if you saw it. It's now official. The San Antonio Spurs playoff streak ends at 22 seasons. 22 consecutive seasons after events of this afternoon in the NBA. Can we just take a moment here, Kenny? I mean, it's not like we need to remind people what Popovich is and what that franchise has been and the standard they have set. But that run is unbelievable by any standard.
It is. I think, you know, what Greg Popovich has done and what the organization has done is just as a detail to excellence over those years. But also, you know, the most talented players that maybe have touched the floor in the last 20 years as well. Having those guys there, and the large part of it is obviously Tim Duncan and David Robinson throughout those years. So an unbelievable streak, unbelievable franchise, but they will be back because they're still only a half game out of what's making it this year. So one game away from being in the playoffs this year. And what I'm really wondering is, like, the guys who didn't make it are not as disappointed as they probably have would have been in a regular season, because you are in a bubble.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I actually get to leave. Like, that's not a, you know, that's not really a bad consolation either. You actually get to go home, because when you're home and you actually lose, you're going back home and you've already been there. So the misery doesn't have any company. And so now the misery, you know, is a little bit different.
I want to talk about the bubble a little bit. Like, from what you can hear from the bubble and the way this is all shaking down, will there be other intangibles that will be valuable this year, say more than any other year, Kenny?
The intangibles?
Yeah, like, will teams need to add something beyond what we normally attribute to championship caliber teams? Because they're in this bubble, because they're around each other all the time, because they're around other teams all the time, without their families.
I think it's sometimes it's going to be easier to focus in because there's less distraction, less anxiety. And then at times, because it's a constant thought process of one thing, like-minded. And sometimes you need a day to get away from the monotony. And I think once now that we're having so many teams, like teams are starting, then all of a sudden the campus gets more of a ghost town.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine, like, when there's only four teams left and they started with 22?
Yeah.
And the things that you were doing when you were with 22 teams and you're running into different players and you're in the hotel. Now you're in there by yourself.
It's the Hunger Games.
Yeah, that's a different environment, I would imagine. And that really would, you have to be locked in and focused to win.
It's going to be interesting, man. Kenny the Jet Smith here on Tim and Sid. The one interesting news, piece of news that came out this week, Adrian Wojnarowski sent out what the parameters will be after round one of who players can invite into the bubble. And obviously family is part of that, but also this was the line of the week in the NBA. Players can also invite, quote, established longstanding personal friends, end quote. If Kenny the Jet Smith is playing today in the bubble and advances past round one, aside from family, how many established, long-standing personal friends would you contemplate inviting into your bubble?
If I was in New York City, I could have the whole freaking city there. I got a lot of love for that. In Orlando, I was big in Orlando, but I wasn't that big, so I probably got like five.
Would you consider who on the TNT set would you consider your most established, long-standing personal friend?
Oof.
Who is it?
I wouldn't invite Shaq or Chuck to my bubble. No.
Why not?
They wouldn't come in my bubble. I don't want to see them guys in a bubble scenario, because they're not the type of guys are going to help you in the bubble. They're going to be in there complaining of how it sucks to be here. And so you bring them in, and they're like, this sucks. I don't want to be. Why are you doing this? How are you? And then you realize what you're in. So, no, I'd rather have, like, someone who's excited to be there and be like, wow, this is great. I got some good friends that we're just hoop friends, and we talk ball all day. We sit around the house, and we talk sports. Those are the guys I'm bringing in the bubble. I'm not bringing in Shaq and Chuck, man, complaining about the old manicurist and, you know, no.
Yeah. The dudes that you would play dominoes or backgammon with and have a coffee or a couple beers. Those are the dudes.
Shaq has a private plane. Like, he's not coming in the bubble happy to visit me, man. Like, no.
Kenny, well, always great catch up. Sorry, Sid, go ahead.
No, I was going to do the same thing. Kenny, thanks for joining us to catch up. We'll just take Timmy's line.
I'll bring you guys in the bubble. Let's go, man. Let's be in.
Really?
We're all gone. I'll bring y'all in the bubble.
Oh, man. I would appreciate. I'd be like a kid walking into Willy Wonka's place. I'd appreciate that.
You know, that's the type of person you have to bring.
I'd be like, Kenny, what do you need? Do you need a juice? Do you know? I'll put the mask on. I'll go get the juice. What do you need? You need any tea time book? I'll book the tea time. I'll be that guy. No problem.
Hey, Charles and Shaq have me running errands for them.
Yeah, we're the opposite. We'll get you the time with the barber. Don't worry about it. We got you covered.
No doubt.
Be well, man. Stay well, okay?
Thanks a lot.
See you, Kenny.
Kenny the Jet Smith. TNT. You knew the answer to that, didn't you?
Yeah, I just wanted him to say it. I did know the answer to it. You read me like a book, McAuliffe. I knew Kenny would have a far better answer than what was kicking around in my head. As usual, he does. He does.
I never thought of the Ernie thing. Like, Draymond Green now hates Ernie.
It's a great point. would you put it past Draymond to, like, text Ernie after, you owe me 25 G's?
Yeah.
Like, would you put it past him? I wouldn't. Because I think Kenny's right. I love Ernie Johnson's one of my favorite broadcasters. He did not have to say that.
And as soon as he said it, you knew the NBA had to fine him.
Yep. That's a respect level Ernie Johnson carry. Scary. It's rather scary when you think about it.
So the San Antonio Spurs are done. And I know we're going to go to break. And I know that there are some people who are interested in what we have to say about what Steve Simmons finds himself in over the last little while. But I want to read to you a couple of things that have transpired since 1997 as the San Antonio Spurs were eliminated from the postseason. 5 NBA titles, 6 finals appearances, Pops won 3 Coach of the Year awards, 18 times they won 50-plus games. They have a .690 win percentage since 1997. It's the best in the NBA, and a losing record for only 197 of the last 8,323 days.
That is a standard there, McAuliffe. That is what we're talking about. And by the way, and also when Becky Hammon becomes the first female head coach in North American pro sports on a men's side, they are going to have a big hand in that as well.
All right. I'm going to take the break. When we come back, we'll have a little discussion about the way media works in the city of Toronto and beyond, and wrap up another 2-hour edition of Tim and Sid right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Tim and Sid, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Earlier in the show, we were talking to Brian Burke, and I know the clip of Berkey talking to Steve Simmons the day he got fired went viral earlier in the postseason, and then was brought up again when Steve Simmons got the one-word answer from Kyle Dubas. And out of respect for people who work at the other place, we haven't really had the conversation, but enough people have brought it up to us. And I think Berkey bringing up Steve Simmons' name on the show today allows us to walk down the road and maybe give people some insight on how the business works for us and how we see roles in the business and what is fair and what is unfair. Is that a safe way to introduce the conversation?
I was kind of more focusing on what happened yesterday specifically, but the hell with it. Well, if you want to go big picture with it, I'm down with that. Let's start with yesterday, because you asked me whether or not I'd heard the media availability of Kyle Dubas before he came on our show. I had not.
Right.
I read the same quotes you read. So I did something today I don't think enough people in our business did. I watched it.
Right.
I actually sat down and watched 50 minutes of it.
So just Dubas talking with the assembled media on a Zoom call.
It was Dubas.
It was Dubas, Shanahan, and Keefe.
Brendan Shanahan and Sheldon Keefe. Yeah. For the most part, though, it was kind of Kyle Dubas. Right. Dubas was the guy most people wanted to talk to. Steve Simmons gets on the call. Now, Steve Simmons reported initially that Austin Matthews was positive with COVID-19. Austin had not released that. The Leafs had not released that. That feels like 9 years ago now, but we remember that moment. And let's just say the Leafs remembered it. So I kept hearing yesterday, and you told me that, that there were tweets out there from some of our colleagues saying Dubas was petulant.
Or short.
Context is a hell of a drug, though. So Steve Simmons gets on the call, and again, Sheldon Keefe can hear everything that's asked of Kyle Dubas, who can hear everything that's asked to Brendan Shanahan.
Right.
So Steve Simmons gets on the call and says, you let Lou Lamoriello go 2 years ago, and now the team is worse than it was. How did that happen? So Kyle Dubas hears that. Obviously, he gets on the defensive. Why? Because he's human. So Brendan Shanahan gives him a completely professional response. And that's when Steve Simmons followed asking Kyle if he misjudged the core, essentially. And Kyle gave him the one word, nope. The answer was so quick, Zoom didn't even cut to Kyle visually.
Right.
It was just, that's it. So my only beef with what happened yesterday specifically was, I don't mind Steve Simmons being Steve Simmons. Steve's been in this business a long time.
Yeah.
But when you antagonize people and get a specific response, you need to shut the hell up about it because you are antagonistic. Now, Steve's a big boy. He can handle himself. He's done it for decades. But my beef was Kyle Dubas, when that quote ran, the context wasn't accurate. And quite frankly, Kyle was instigated into that answer. And no one reported that. No one who either heard it or didn't hear it reported that. And that's the problem I had. Just be fair about it. Kyle Dubas spent nearly 40 minutes defending his team. Guess what? That's what GMs do, okay? You don't like that? You want a guy to quit on Zoom? You're an idiot. He did what GMs do. And he actually said he's willing to go in different directions. Again, if you would have listened to the 50 minutes, you would know that. But well, not a lot of people did. So that was my beef from yesterday.
Exactly. And the one thing I want to say about Steve Simmons is you look at his Twitter timeline, he knows what he's doing. There is a guy like that in every market, and there are some of the most highly paid guys in the United States of America are guys who stir the pot. And Simmons is a big boy. He knows what he's in for. The part of the people sticking up for Steve Simmons or the people who hate Steve Simmons, like, don't kid yourself. The guy's been in the business for a long time. He knows what his role has evolved into, and he understands it, and so does Kyle Dubas, and so does Brendan Shanahan, and so does Brian Burke, and so do most others. And just because you're new to it doesn't mean that everyone doesn't know where the role is drawn and where the lines are drawn. Do you know what I'm trying to say by that?
Oh, I know. I know exactly what you're saying. But people in our business, I'm not mad at a lot of fans for not recognizing that because that's not their world. I get it. Like, you and correct. I live in this world. This is our business. I'm fine with Joe Fan not realizing that. What I'm not fine with are people in our business who are painting Kyle Dubas out to be specific way during a 50-minute media availability.
Yeah, but what I'm
not giving you the whole context of over why he gave a one-word answer.
But what I'm telling you is, just like some of the fans who haven't been around long enough or can't analyze it the same way we do, there are people in our business who do that too.
Oh, hells yes. I would agree with you. Again, listen, Steve.
And in my
Steve's
interaction
been doing this
with
a
Steve
long
Simmons,
time.
He's been good.
Me too. I'm right there with you, Tim. So my really, this beef isn't about Steve. What I'm saying is, you got to listen to the whole thing for context instead of painting a guy out to be petulant,
right?
Because it's unfair. Because he wasn't.
But I didn't agree, and we didn't say Austin Matthews' name when we saw the report because we didn't agree with outing a guy that. But that's the way life is. That's the way it goes. You're not going to agree with everything? Have a conversation and move on. And while you're having the conversation, don't forget to always...
Now wash your hands. Wash your hands.
Great segue into it, Mikal.
Yeah, we're done. I mean, we ran out of breath.
I wash my hands of this topic, Mikal. Wash my hands.
Otherwise, you're...